But we're going to go to Galatians chapter 5. Happy you know where I'm going already. We're going to go to Galatians chapter 5. And last week we talked about the heritage that Christianity gives you. And if you follow Christ closely and read His Word, you'll get the heritage that we talked about last week. But we kind of want to, I don't want to shift gears per se, but kind of go more into it, what we've got going on nowadays when it comes to the lifestyle, if you will. Everything's a lifestyle right now. The lifestyle of Christianity that is built in our culture. The importance with the heritage is exponential in that without it, there's nothing worth anything to pass down to your kids. Well, now, instead of that, like we talked about last week, it's all a choice in what you want and what you want to do and how you perceive this Christianity to be. So we've kind of turned it into something that is passed down, something that we have and understand and is passed down into something else, into these different, what I call Christianity traits that people like to try and put on and purvey and give to their children so that they can make the correct choice for, you know, quote unquote, of what they want to do with their life. There's a wide swath of churches today, and they all seem to have their own version of Christianity. There is no unity in the church today because we can't decide what Christianity actually is. There's different churches for different people, and they're all really campaigning for their attendance and their name on the roll of the church. And so what led them to that? Besides their own selfishness and wanting those numbers. But we've kind of, between Facebook and the church signs, you kind of see which direction we've gone to where there's these different traits for churches and for these Christians, so-called, that are out there. So let's look at a couple things concerning the nature of Christianity. Now, from the Bible, there's the specific passage that tells us the fruit of the Spirit that comes with the true Christianity, that is following Christ and His Word. And we're going to start in verse 22 of Galatians 5, and we're going to go ahead and read that, and then I'm going to kind of contrast against it here. But Galatians chapter 5 and verse 22 says, "But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. And they that are Christ have crucified the flesh and the affections and lusts. If we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Let us not be desirous of vainglory, provoking one another, envying one another." That is the picture of a true Christian. And that is not fruits plural, but a fruit singular of the Spirit. To where you cannot have just one and call yourself Christian. And so the picture, this heritage we talked about last year, or last week, it feels like a year, it's not just one, it's not a group of things that you put together and that's a Christian. This is the fruit of following and being and walking in the Spirit. As it says right there, if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. This is what the Spirit of God will foster in you and help you to learn and show and teach better to your children. But that's not what we have today. Today, in churches, there's a contrast of what we teach. And it's important that we know what's out there. Not in the sense like most people say, but to know what's really going on out there. This is what we should be fostering in ourselves. So to contrast, this is a few things we're going to talk about today that Christians truly, quote-unquote, are. And they foster several traits, and I'm going to hit on them today. One trait that they heavily teach, that they say they are against, is confusion. I know that I mention Facebook a whole lot up when I'm up here. And I'm not on it a terrible lot, but it doesn't take being on it much to know that you have a lot of friends that are quote-unquote Christians that are not Christian. And I know a lot of people all over all the U.S. just through different varying sources, and the more you look at their Facebook feed, the more you realize that these people are not what they say they are. Not that you ever convinced that they were, but you're like, this is crazy. How can they even think they are? Christians more and more are starting to back off of the Christian thing. and trying to find a way to blend in and to mesh with the world so that they can have both pieces of the pie and eat it too. And if you look at a lot of content that provokes you to think about what they believe, for instance, I was on there and there's a church page that a certain person I follow shares a lot of their stuff. And it has the church name. It's like we have Straight Paths Bible Church page. They have a page that shares their sermons. It shares their latest sermon series, what they're going to be teaching on, whatever the children's church is doing, everything like that. And so he shared one this past week, and they're doing a series on Proverbs, which sounds super promising. And I know. And this comes out, and it says, Untying the Knots, K-N-O-T-S, Knots of Proverbs. And a lot of it's the shout knots and the knots and this. And the description was as follows. I wrote it down because it was really good. It says, Join us as we sort out what you've been taught your whole life and show you greater meaning for your life from the book of Proverbs. That's kind of mysterious. And so me, I kind of inquired a little bit about it. I looked through the comments, because that's where you go to clarify things about a post. I mostly read the arguments. It says, someone asked a question, and it listed a verse from the King James Bible. And so the church then replied and said, perhaps you'll gain better clarity from reading from the whatever version it was when it says blah, 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 you know, whatever it was. And it says, sometimes you don't have to fully explain the verse, but really understand what God means for it in your heart. This is the purpose of your Untying the Knots of Proverbs. They're not trying to make it a practical, spiritual application for your life, but instead we're going to dance around the fact that you can interpret it the way you want to because that's the way it means to your heart. Objective truth. This is what they're out there sowing in the hearts of every children and adult sitting in that church. And at the root of that objective truth, in order to further inject it in your life, they even said this, to where, how can you know what a Bible means without having another Bible to clarify it? Yeah. There are several different versions that are used in that church, and I know it. The preacher uses one, and he says, turn in your Bible, whatever version you have, to this verse. I don't know what happens when someone raises their hand and says, well, it's not in here. That's a whole nother problem for a whole nother age, I guess. Modern problems, modern solutions. But this is not, that is confusion. That is what they're sowing. Because they're putting out there that you can use this version, I can use this version, and you can use this version, and we can all learn together. But only as it speaks to your heart. Because the heart's where we're supposed to go for truth, don't you know? The way you interpret it, the way it's going to go. This is why, this is a trait that they actively teach for the Christian life. And this is what they're sending it out with through Facebook. And this is a Baptist church on Facebook doing this. It's not like there's a denomination out there that we stay away from. It's every denomination doing this, moving towards a one denomination solution. Even non-denominationals associate with a denomination anymore, if that tells you where we're going. This is all over the nation, promoting several different versions for quote-unquote better understanding for your benefit. This nurtures confusion in the church because the preacher doesn't even know which Bible is the Bible because he can't have an opinion on that. In order to have this objective truth, you cannot have a truth that is true to you. Because if that's just your truth, then it's not even truth at all. And the human mind knows that. Subconsciously, the human heart knows that if it's an objective truth that is not true to all, it is not true at all. Right. We can deny that as much as we want. However, the fact remains the same. God made our heart, God made our soul, God made our minds, and we are smarter than that, whether we deny it or not. And because of that, this confusion takes root in a heart, and there is no right, and there is no wrong, and we live in an amoral society. This confusion is poisonous, not only to the church, but to the world as a whole. If you can't count on Christians to know the truth and follow the truth and know the truth, you can't count on anybody at all. And because we've thrown it to the wind and thrown it away, there is no truth and there is nothing but confusion, of which God is not the author of.
Right.
Who's the author of all this confusion? Lucifer. It comes straight out of hell. This objective truth comes straight out of hell. Because you can believe what you want. You can believe anything but the Bible and have it be your truth and still go to hell. Yeah. That's the easiest thing you can do. You believe one thing to go to heaven and anything else to go to hell. And that's why the devil doesn't even try hardly to do it. Because he puts one thing out there, if someone latches onto it and multiplies it, he don't care what it multiplies into, because it's still going to send them to hell. There is absolutely no rhyme or reason about it. And they're breeding it in the churches today. And they're breeding it to you, to your generation, to our generation, and we're eating it up. Because that sounds real good to me. If I can do what I want and claim Christ anyway, then that's a pretty good deal. What they don't know is the end result. And really, they know the end result. Because confusion, in the end, always ends up in your mind knowing it's a lie. Yep. The only answer in your mind, your human mind, to confusion is this is a lie. That's why marriages fall apart. That's why friendships don't last. And that's why people don't stay in church. True. You can't preach on sin because there's so much of it in the church and it's not wrong because it's not your truth. The confusion here is nothing but a lie sent to deceive, and we are willingly deceived. God is not the author of confusion, so confusion is obviously not the church. The second one we actively teach in church to go with this confusion is manipulation. And this is a big word I found out this week that not many people know the meaning of. Manipulation is something that is justified in most lives because of one simple fact, is that manipulation is not, it is, but here's the modern definition. Manipulation is not the active participation in a lie. It is the convincing of an individual of your truth. That is the modern Google definition.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Not active participation in a lie, but the convincing of another individual of your truth. This is how cults are born. Just go on there. But in church, on the radio, in books, and in Christian schools, quote unquote, everywhere, we're being raised up and are raising up a generation of master manipulators. Look at what you're teaching them. We brought it up several times in this class right here. Push to get what you want in life. Pray until something happens. Holler, kick, and scream spiritually if you don't. We're encouraged to question the meaning of God's word for the specific reason of we don't want to do it. Anything from spiritual service to dating, we can just say, I don't think that's what God has for me anymore. And that's a cop-out. It's the master manipulation and bringing God into it. That's just a, you know. Here's what the dictionary says about manipulation. Manipulation is the deceit of another person, semicolon, a lie. That's the true definition of manipulation.
Yes.
In the Bible, in any book, if I say it to you, that's the connotation that it has, because that is the actual definition of the word. The actual, and when you say the convincing of another person to your truth, that is truly a modern definition, because that's no older than 5.5 years when that movement started.
Yep.
It is a brand new thing, and we've already altered it to make it feel a little better, because manipulation is what it is. And that's what we're actively teaching in churches. There again, and I'm going to bring this up again, Mr. Dude with the Chalk, we remember this guy, where he walked around a building, chalking and circling certain things in a huge circle around the city, walking 6 city blocks around that building he wanted for his church. Off of an old Jewish fable, not even a Bible story, an old Jewish fable about this guy who, when there was no rain, and I was getting very close to it out here, where he took a stick and draw a circle around himself saying, I'm not leaving this circle until you send rain, talking to God.
Manipulation.
He was attempting the art of manipulation with the Holy One. And I don't believe that God gave in to that bratty, selfish action and sent rain for that purpose. Because God sends rain when rain is needed. He knows crops are dying. He knows people are thirsty. He knows the ground is dry. So what difference does it make if you draw a circle and stand in it, except for the fact that you're ridding the world of your existence if you sit there long enough? What good are you doing? You're doing nothing but attempting to do the abominable to the holy God of Israel. So because of that wonderful story, he decided he would do the same thing for his building. And so he walked around the entire building chalking for weeks at a time and telling his church what he had been doing, to which they go around and start chalking. I don't know if they start chalking cars at a dealership or what they were doing, but this is the what he purveyed to them they should do if they want something, and that is to circle it, claim it, and tell God that you will not stop until you get it. It is called the circle mentality, I believe is what he called it. Be a circle maker. So there is now a group, even on Facebook, because I looked at it, and it's not private, so anyone can look this up. It is the Circle Maker group on Facebook. And it is entertaining if you want to see a whole bunch of spoiled, quote-unquote, Christian brats that are attempting to manipulate the will of God in their favor with nothing but a thing of chalk. I don't know about you, but unless you're Jesus, you can't make nothing out of chalk that won't be washed away really quick. So this is what we're teaching our children, our young adults, and our adults, and all the successful people that go to church. Because when you're successful and when you say you can have more money, that sounds awful. You know, it sounds a lot better to you. And so you're going to teach the Sunday school class. The best thing about this whole manipulation mentality that's influenced by that circle maker deal is that it feeds the fleshly desire to have what you want through Jesus and still be able to go to church and feel good about yourself, but without a lick of scripture in that entire book. And when you say, this isn't what God has for me anymore, you decide that God is done with that building. Just in his case, let's stick with his example. You have decided that you need another building because God is done with that building. What we should have done, I guess, as a church, is found the building and started circling it before we sold this one. Because we're kind of in the same situation. But we just let it set, and God sent it, and now it's gone. And now we're sitting in this building. So everyone, we're going to hand out chalk after the service. How ridiculous does that sound being up here? I found the building over yonder here, and we're just all going to take a piece of chalk and spend about an hour over there praying and circling like some sort of soccer field. I mean, what are you going to do? How absurd does that sound? But how good does it sound that you're doing some action that's going to force God to take action on your part? When you come to church looking for something for you and that someone telling you that you can have what you want, you just do this magical genie in a bottle trick. We're teaching manipulation. If you teach manipulation of God, you're teaching manipulation of everybody else. In fact, you're manipulating them into thinking this. And what are you saying? I don't think God has this for me anymore. Like God's will changes on a whim. I thought God never changed. How then can he redirect your course day to day with no rhyme or reason? He's not you. He's not human. The idea that we can freely manipulate God and his word because it's what we want to do in that day and time in our life, and all we have to claim is some spiritual experience, it's not a way to justify a decision that we make. But we've chosen to do so. This is not the nature of God, and thus a false nature. Beware making friends with other Christians who buy into this stuff. Manipulation is something that's learned and practiced in every factor of life, and don't be foolish enough to think that you can't be. If you do not guard yourself and know what they're being taught, and the absolute garbage that they're putting in their mind through this confusion, manipulation, this cancel culture we're in, what makes you think that you're not going to be canceled here soon and the first person to rat you out? Yeah. If you can't look around and realize that manipulation is the name of the game in this, just go with the last 4 months. Yeah. It's the name of the game, and they're seeing who can and can't be. And if you want to voice how much you can't be, you're going to be first on the list. Congratulations. Yep. You want to be first, go right ahead. I'll stand at the back of the line. I'm good. People who live this way are in it only for what they can get out of life, and whatever you can provide, and if you cannot, you're out. But they'll remember you. They'll remember the haters. They'll remember the Debbie Downers. They'll remember the people that think that they should actually follow God and that God gives the increase and not you force the increase. That mentality is gone. You're the minority. And it's not going to work. But it's what we're being taught. You go to confusion, you'll quickly slip to manipulation because you're being manipulated. You will learn their ways, and their ways will become your ways, and you will pass it down the line. Just like this Christian heritage can be taught and passed and lived as it should be, so can these traits. And they are. And they are much quicker than any Christian heritage. The darkness is falling in, but there is still light in this world. Oftentimes, confusion goes to manipulation, goes to disparaging. This is a very good word. Who knows what disparaging means? A couple of you. I just went to the dictionary. I Googled it once, but it was pretty low. And so what I got from the dictionary says expressing the opinion that something is of little worth. Nowadays we call it downplaying or downing or dissing. We have a whole bunch of different words we use for this actual word that is disparaging. Those other three words are actually just 50 years old, whereas disparaging goes all the way back to Bible times.
Discrediting.
It's something that we do. It's an adjective. And does it sound familiar? Maybe in the context of belittling standards. Discrediting the importance of church attendance. Canceling holiness, if you want to go modern on all this. Disparaging remarks are opinion that are passed off as a, quote, greater truth and are now widely accepted. It is something that we've opened our mind to and we have figured out. So instead of showing them why we're right, we're going to disparage what they do and force what we do.
Yep.
It's hard to believe that in 4 months we've got almost every church in America hooked up that Facebook Live services are just as good as being there. This new medium that everyone was on the brink of, and actually Baptist churches spoke out against quite often, is now the, quote, new normal that everyone's bought into. Most buildings are still empty due to this process, and this is mostly due to the idea of being planted in their head early on and is now acted on. However, the trait is dangerous and that bleeds over into every area of our life. This disparaging does not stop with the Church of God. These Christians that are being taught, they're manipulated in these other ways. They don't think they won't come back and say, well, they're still doing this, and if they were doing it our way, they'd have more. They will talk down why you wear a skirt. They will talk down why you fix your hair a certain way. They'll talk down that you don't go here or do this or listen to this. And they won't just say, okay, that's your opinion, like you're supposed to do to them.
Right. Mm-hmm.
They will tell you every reason you are a low-down, dirty dog that is blocking progressivism in this church, and that's why you're the reason people are going to hell.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they are convinced of it as well. This is a descent into this new way of thinking, this new church. That is the quote-unquote emerging church, as someone claimed the other day, that is going to save this world. You may have heard me talk about it before. How many people know of the book by Rob Bell, Love Wins?
Yeah.
That book, when you read it, is not about the love of Christ saving every person. It is the disparaging of the church through the ages and everything about it. It's pretty much exegetical criticism of every doctrine ever preached and out of the Bible from the church.
He's not even in church anymore.
No. There's 5 or 6 of them that aren't.
Yeah.
However, and that was coming to that point, but he is still one of the number one authors for most non-denominational and Baptist churches in America. The number one book that they used for Sunday school, I was actually hoping it'd be Second to the Circle Maker, but it wasn't. They still exegete that book in order to teach their children and their Sunday school lessons on love. But when you read the book, read two whole chapters, all it is picking apart the doctrine of the church. It has nothing to do with love. It has nothing to do with going to heaven, except for the fact that every sinner that ever lived is going to heaven. That's the only part of Love Wins that he expounds on, and that takes up about two paragraphs of the entire book. And people are eating it in, disparaging the saints, the church, God himself. And this is a trait that we openly teach, and this is a trait that we show them. That's how you beat them. That's how you do what you want. This is what you need to be doing. Don't just tell them they're wrong. Talk about why they're wrong. Spread it everywhere. Down them. Lie about them if you have to. I heard one preacher say, over in New York, he said, if you have to lie about someone to expose their lying, God condones it. It was a smear campaign for him to get the preacher, the pastor's position in that church.
Politics.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. But I thought it was interesting after hearing last week's sermon. But that is what we're coming to. It is never right to do wrong to do right unless you're trying to get in a pastor's position. We have disparaging is the way of the church nowadays. It is absolutely disgusting. This falls away to unthankfulness. Another trait that we're, I don't want to say inadvertently teaching, because it's right there, along with the, especially the manipulation, showing them how to get what they want from God right now. We have instilled, instead of thankfulness for what we do have, we have unthankfulness for everything we don't have. This is a part of the falling away that we talked about. One of the fundamental truths of God's Word when you come away from this, and it's the beginning of the end. Even in Romans chapter 1, 19 through 22, it says, because that which may be known of God is manifest in them, for God has showed it unto them. But the invisible things of Him from the creation of the world are clearly seen, being understood by the things that are made, even His eternal power and Godhead, so that they are without excuse. Because that, when they knew God, they glorified Him not as God, neither were thankful, but became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. Professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. The unthankfulness contributed to the foolery and darkened their heart. This descent that we're systematically teaching our children and letting them teach society that this is what Christianity is, that we're just another group of people out there, along with the gays and the lesbians and everything else they want to be, this is just another group. And you can join us if you want, but we'll love everybody. This anthem of love is not going to work. And this unthankfulness, it doesn't even make sense. How can you be another group of people and not have any direction? They've taken away from their being different denominations, now we're just one people to be eliminated. But we've embraced that and try in an effort to be this one person they want us to be. They just lump you all into Christianity. We are severely unthankful for everything we have through the teaching that we have enlightened ourselves with. Children are severely unthankful for anything. I've had people come in and buy cars from me that were buying it for their 16-year-old child. I'm like, you're going to buy him an $18,000 car, and I'm sure he had the money to do it. But their child was not thankful at all.
Nope.
And whenever you see them come back in for service, they're just the same way. And their dad does it for them. It's like he's their manny or something that runs around and does all their affairs for them. But I've also seen people come in and slap $8,000 on the table that they've saved, and now they're 18, and they've saved for 2 years every dollar they could, and I sold them an $8,000 car, and they love it,
right?
Because they pay for it.
Yeah.
They put tires on it when I wouldn't, because I didn't have the money to. And they serviced it, made sure it was their car, and they took care of the thing, and they're still driving it everywhere. And they were thankful that their dad took the time to bring them up to the dealership to pay for a car.
Yeah.
But that's not what we want in churches anymore, because we want our church to keep growing. We want the money pot to keep increasing. We want more sports teams. We want more buildings. We want more people. And if you're satisfied with what you got, you're not a Christian. I find it hard to believe that people who teach that doctrine of selfishness don't see the contrast between what they're creating and what sin has created in people. And that's why we've eliminated sin. If you start drawing that contrast, people might start questioning it. We don't want them to question, we just want them to work. More confusion. Each of these traits breed each other. So what are we going to do about that? What are you going to do about that? This is what's being taught. And this is very evident when you go out anywhere that this is exactly what it is. If you have a friend that's a Christian on Facebook and they post all this stuff and half of them can't even spell because they didn't go to school or something, it's just how it goes.
Yep.
So when you're trying to read what they're disparaging on Facebook, you're like, how can they claim to be a Christian filled with so much love and has so much hate towards what you believe? Have so much hate towards what the Bible truly says. So much so that they'll throw out whatever version you put out there, stomp it into the ground, put their version in there. And eventually, because it's coming, all these other versions are going to get a little too, they're not going to be perfect. You're going to say something they don't like, so there'll be another version come out. And they will keep altering it until there is a Bible to make everybody happy. So don't hold your breath for another one, you know, a last one to come out. There will be something. And there are a lot of people just go to the comic book Bible, the action Bible, to where it has pictures and everything, to where, because you can interpret the pictures however you want.
Sure.
And it looks pretty epic. But that's terrible. I know a preacher that says sometimes he goes to the action Bible to get a better idea of what the Bible's really saying. Because he can interpret the, I guess they're hieroglyphics, the pictures in it better than he can the actual text.
I wonder if he likes color.
I kind of wonder. He's a Methodist, whatever. I don't understand that. Those kind of people have bought into the culture of completely burning books, going straight to audio, video. They go to movie theaters, all they do is watch movies, and there's a big old series now that is crowd-funded that has better graphics than most television shows called The Chosen, and it is about the life of Christ. And I can't tell you how many people are buying into that show, hook, line, and sinker, not because it's biblically accurate, but because it has the name Jesus on it, the guy has a big nose and is kind of ugly, and he's the guy that plays Jesus, and it's a TV show.
It's more interesting than preaching or reading.
It's a TV show. If you just say it's a TV show, people will watch it. If you say preaching, they're out. They won't even listen to a sermon on the way to work because it doesn't keep them awake. I'd fall asleep driving. Like, that's probably because you were never smacked and made to stay awake in church.
You're a boring preacher.
I've been through a couple of them too, but I stayed awake. Barely. I did. But this is what we got going on. People don't care. But they will care if you say anything. The true fruits of the Spirit, like we read at the beginning of this lesson, is a trait that you take on. Not just one. It is a fruit that you eat of and is fostered in you. And every time you practice these things, you take another step in the direction towards God. However, on the flip side, everything we've talked about today is a step in the other direction. Away from God. Remember what we read at the first of this. What fruit do you see in your life? Do you see the fruit of the Spirit? Or do you see a domination of confusion, manipulation, disparaging, unthankfulness? any one of these. Unlike the fruit of the Spirit, where it fosters all, each trait of this fosters each other. Check yourself.
Oh, yeah.
What traits do you see? What trait of Christianity do you see in your life?